Oh, welcome back. Looking at some of the text messages on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line, 800-905-0989. Going back to that one story about how the man gets on a plane, he pays for extra bag space, finds someone, puts their shoes up there. Now, that's not where you put your baggage if you're flying. So he takes the shoes out and says, this goes below the seat. I'm putting my bag up here, and caused all kinds of conflict. I'm looking at some of the text messages that are coming in. I'll tell you what, they are great. So thank you for that. One thing that we heard there at the top of the hour news from Fox News, the Pope calling for, I guess, an end of gun violence, which is not really a controversial thing to say. I don't think you want innocent people to be killed. I think that in America today, when you talk about gun violence, that leads mostly left-leaning types of liberals into saying that gun owners are inherently criminals. Thus, you have to eliminate gun ownership. That is the road they go down towards. When we look at the tragedy that happened where this biological male going through something mentally goes in and plots out and plans to shoot children and adults inside of a church, that he was planning to, you know, at least talk to people at it. It's the part of the story that's really terrible is to think that he went in there with the, I am looking for guidance, will you take me in? And their generosity and their caringness of being a Catholic church is yes. But he used it as a way to get the layout and the movements of the church so he can better hurt the people inside the church is just absolutely sickening. And on CNN, Sebastian Gorka pointed this out. And what he points out, I think, is the main point in all of this, which is we have to address the mental health issue. And the mental health issue is tied into biological males or biological females identifying as a different sex and going through this downward spiral, and what causes them in their mind to identify that way in an unhealthy way and treating it as something that is unhealthy, particularly in minors and young adults. So Sebastian Gorka calls it out, and this was on CNN. I wish I would have pulled the first part of this clip, because on CNN, there's a reason why they brought him on, because he said things on social media, and as he was saying things on social media, they saw that as sensational, and that would get their audience all riled up. Look what this conservative is saying. And immediately, Sebastian Gorka called him fake news and saying, you are definitely misinterpreting what I'm saying here. So here is what he assesses here, the problem. Let me press play here. This is from CNN.
So what we should do is we should look at the early warning signals, the signs. One of these shooters at a recent school shooting had 24 interactions with the local law enforcement. Now, that beggars belief. We should be providing off-ramps. We should be providing mental health options for these individuals. I find it hard to believe that an individual goes from getting his mother to sign a change of name certificate, age 17, and then just a handful of years later is mowing down innocent children in a church pew during a Catholic mass, and nobody realized there was a problem. That's what we have to address to save the next children from the next atrocity. It's not about the sexual proclivities of the individual. It's the fact that nobody seems to notice a very disturbing pattern towards violence. You don't wake up one morning saying, I'm going to do a video on YouTube threatening to kill the president, targeting Jews, targeting children. That doesn't happen overnight. Somebody saw that degradation. Somebody saw those mental issues and said nothing. That's what we have to prevent. The early warning signals must be addressed if children's lives are to be saved.
Okay, so I thought that was well said. Now, is a early warning sign that you want to change your gender, is that a warning mental sign that there could be some issues there? I think that's going to have to be a question we have to answer honestly, because what we are doing right now is saying you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to connect the two. You're not allowed to imply that someone that is going through this may have issues going on that needs to be addressed. The mental issue side could lead you down a dark road that makes you a dangerous individual. Can you look at that as an early sign? And organizations like CNN or MSNBC, they don't want to look at it that way because they want to eliminate that variable before you even question it because it's insensitive, they believe, to that individual. So it's, I don't know if it's a stalemate, but it definitely is something that needs to be addressed and a point that needs to be made. I'm getting some other text messages, by the way, too. One text message said, good morning. What was the name of that company out of Texas that builds concrete homes? It's called Printed, but instead of an ED, it's a 3D at the end. Print 3D, but it's pronounced Printed. Thank you for that. One person said, the Pope is a gun grabber. Where did they say that? No, Pope Leo called for us to lose our Second Amendment rights by having all or guns confiscated. Now, I didn't hear that one. I'll tell you, Fox News didn't play that part. Unless if they did, I didn't hear it. I apologize. I'm going to have to look into that a little bit further. Being that he is here from the United States and he's got a pretty conservative brother and knowing the family that he came from and the area that he grew up in, I don't know if that is... I can't just take that text message, let me put it this way, without researching it further, but thank you for giving me something to look up. But going back to Sebastian Gorka there, I've seen some of the commentaries out there, and there was a commentary in the New York Post. It says, Minnesota carnage shows how pro-trans bullying silences common sense. And this is the gist of the commentary, and I'll kind of read the start of it here. Before Robin Westman murdered two children and wounded many more at Minneapolis Catholic school, Robin was Robert, a troubled teen whose mother worked at the parish. Robert's mother approved the change, but after Robert became Robin in 2020, the teen's psychological problems obviously didn't go away. They led 5 years later to carnage. Serious discussion on transgenderism, mental illness, and violence is long overdue. So this is the crux of it here. A serious discussion is long overdue. And I think a lot of people have discussed it. I think a lot of people have looked at it. But what happens when you do have this sort of conversation? If you're on a social media platform, like let's say this show wasn't on a radio station like WORD, where you're free to discuss these ideas. But if the show was on YouTube, then you would have been demonetized and perhaps flagged and perhaps kicked off the platform. If it was a podcast, depending on if it became popular and this is the stance you took, the actual podcast platform could consider booting you off of that because they don't want the content on their hosting servers. So let's say to ourselves real quick, is it really that insensitive to say that mental illness is often associated with transgenderism? And is that a connection that is worthy of investigating to help these people to make sure they're not a danger to other people? I don't think that's unreasonable. I think that is something that is long overdue. And I think they do make a good point when it comes to it. You know, by the way, coming up in the next couple of segments, I found there was a study that came out and there were some researchers from Brown University on how left and right-leaning people appear to process political informations in similar ways. This may be one of the only things that those on the left and those on the right actually agree on, or not necessarily agree on, but the scientific process of how we process that information is what actually may bring us together. Now, is that something that can help us find common ground? So we're going to talk to a researcher that looked into this at Brown University coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Happy to be with you here and looking forward to spending the next hour, the rest of the hour with you on WORD. Welcome back. I find this to be a very fascinating topic when looking at how different people view the world in a lot of ways. So many of us are on polar opposites. Sometimes you want to hear what that polar opposite is. Sometimes you don't. It's kind of, what is it, the Almond Joys jingle would apply there in that sense? Joining us now is someone that researched this, and I was really fascinated by it. I saw the paper was published in the American Psychological Association, and it was from researchers at Brown University. Joining us, one of those researchers, Oriel Feldman Hall. Thank you so much for joining us in South Carolina this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So I find it kind of fascinating, someone that looks at political news. You know, my main job in Detroit is just news. So we look at a lot of different viewpoints, press releases, things like that. I get an opportunity to do fill-in work like here in South Carolina, where we get to talk more about it. We give more opinion on that side. So when I saw this study that you guys researched and released and found out that whether you're right-leaning or left-leaning, political extreme individuals tend to process political information in similar ways, I was very fascinated by that. What did you find in your research?
So we basically asked people who were on opposite sides were very politically conservative or very politically liberal. And we brought them into the lab. We put them into what is called an fMRI scanner so we could record what was happening in their brain while they watched political news and political content. And what we found was rather astonishing. The people who were on the opposite sides of the spectrum, the more they were on the fringes of the political left or the political right, the more their brains were processing that same information in similar ways, more so than two people who were ideologically moderate and therefore closer along the political spectrum and presumably holding similar ideological beliefs.
So when you put them in the machine and you're looking at the way their brain operates, okay, so you start to see these similarities and the extremes are more similar than those that may have similar or moderate type of views. Does that tell you anything? Does it, the way that they process this information is going in and the output is completely different?
Well, the output is not completely different. What it does tell us, the measure that we're using in the scanner is basically an understanding of how much two people share the same perspective on the content that they're looking at and they're consuming. So the readout is that people who are on the opposite sides of the political spectrum, if they're more extreme, that extremity is actually bringing them closer together in how they see the world.
Oh, interesting. Why can they not communicate that then? It seems like if you're on the polar opposites, are they just afraid to admit it? I mean, there's the other social side of it then. If what you're finding is the way that they are hardwired is similar, then where's the disconnect
Correct.
Coming from?
Well, so I think that, first of all, the brain processes a whole ton of information at any given moment. And this is just along one particular dimension in which people are sharing a similar perspective. This dimension, we think, has something to do with being psychologically aroused, like being emotional. So the brain regions that we find this coupling, this shared similarity, is in regions of the brain that are often associated with fear. And so what it says is that two people on the opposite ends of the spectrum might disagree in conversation or on paper about a particular topic, political topic, but what they share is how they're processing that world. They have this fearful, presumably this fearful intent or perspective of what's happening, and that is a shared common understanding between someone who is extreme left and extreme right.
Well, that's interesting. You know, when you say the term psychologically aroused, the first thing I thought of was, okay, they're viewing this as entertainment, meaning they're watching their perspective networks, and they're using it as a way, and they're filling their brain. They're psychologically aroused to me would indicate something that, of entertainment purposes. So you're saying it's different. This is tapping into something more primal, the fear, so the emotional side that way.
That's exactly correct. And what we find is that the more the political content, they're watching a debate between two political candidates, the more those two political candidates start to use polarizing language or fearful language, the more the coupling, the more those two people on the opposite sides of the political spectrum are sharing a shared understanding in these regions of the brain that code for fear. In other words, the more that when you watch TV and you hear whatever news outlet using, you know, words that make you fearful, or that are meant to put you on the opposite end of the spectrum, that very process of using these trigger words makes you, if you're more extreme, more aroused, more fearful, and more likely to share an experience of someone who's on the opposite side of the political spectrum.
Okay. I have so many follow-up questions now. When they're in the MRI machine, how are you getting this information to them? Do you have someone talking to them and maybe through the little speaker to get the live results? Like, how do you even conduct an experiment like this?
Sure. So we bring people in, and in the scanner, they can watch videos. They just lie there. They're completely still. Their head is being restrained so that there's no movement so that we can record all the brain activity. And they lie there for about an hour, and they just watch political videos in this case. And so as they're watching political videos, we're recording what's happening in their brain while they're watching. In this case, it was the vice presidential debate back in 2016 between Pence and Kaine. And they're consuming this, and they consume some other news propaganda as well, some pretty dry videos, but on hot topics like abortion and so forth. And so they watch all of this unfolding and consuming this political content for about an hour, and we're recording what's happening in their brain the entire time.
This sounds like a Stanley Kubrick movie, like a plot line to something like that. Okay, do you think that this is outside of the scale of the research that you're doing, and this is more opinion than anything else. Do you think these networks understand the research that you're putting out? They perhaps manipulate viewers in a way, understanding the same things that you understand?
When you say networks, you mean TV networks and other political outlets.
Where that information is being consumed, like let's say they watched a debate, sure. Yeah. But let's say they're watching a major network. We understand that there's a certain amount of manipulation that goes on in order to get people to continue to watch. It's like that with any type of entertainment, social media. These big tech companies do the same thing where they try to hook you in and keep and sink you in. Do you think the psychological side, in your experience, they understand this and this is a calculated thing that they do in order to keep people consuming their content?
Yeah, so I can't speak to people's motives on these networks, but from my understanding, most social media outlets, most networks have a broad understanding that the language that they use, the images that they use can be, let's say, for lack of a better term, a bit clickbaity, and that Sure. will pull people in ways that are not always so psychologically safe, like fear, Yeah. fear tactics, for example. And so, yes, it becomes this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. You get more clicks, you get more eyes on your media, but with that, you get these psychological after effects that are not so great for our society.
Okay. Well, you know what? Can we keep talking about this after the break? I'd love to.
Sure.
Oriel Feldman-Hall joining us, researcher at Brown University. Very fascinating topic here, and I have so many more questions coming up on WORD. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back. We continue our conversation with a researcher at Brown University, Oriel Feldman-Hall. Thank you so much for holding on there. And I just find your study so fascinating. The one that was just recently published with the American Psychological Association, polar opposites politically may be more alike than you think. And Oriel, I have a couple of more questions here for you, including part of the finding looked at not just here in the United States, but the measures may not actually carry over to other cultures. Generally, globally, it doesn't always seem to be the case. Is that right?
Well, I think that, so we basically look at ideological differences within America. We recruited people who are American, who are politically engaged. Whether you're left or right does correspond to other countries. And while the particulars of the values and the ideologies might be different, our extremism measures are likely to be found in other places as well. So this isn't so much about the exact values that are being held by particular conservatives that are American or particular liberals that are American, but more generally, just how extreme they are in their belief set. So, of course, we didn't run this study in another country, right, in America. So at this point, we can only say this is true of Americans and this particular ideology. But I would imagine and hazard to guess that they would replicate in another country if we were looking at extreme individuals whose political values might be somewhat different.
Wow. Yeah, it's so interesting. So you do this in through Brown University, but you have, I was looking at your extensive resume when you go to Brown University. It shows some of the different research and things that you're doing. It's quite impressive. I'm just curious, this seems probably inside baseball, but when you do a study like this, would you find media outlets reaching out to you, trying to hire you? Like, does that happen where they're like, oh, we could really use an Oriole here to kind of tell us how we can better frame our content? Does that ever happen in your field?
It happens on occasion. I'd have to say that what people are most interested in doing is understanding how to get people to stay on their blogs, on their Instagrams, on their TikToks, on their news station longer and longer. So the psychological tendencies of people to want to engage in that kind of stuff is actually completely at odds with this type of research. So from a political point of view, it's interesting because, of course, our country is racked with political polarization. We're seeing all-time highs of people who, you know, even families who, like, can't sit down together at the dinner table and have a conversation about politics because it becomes too charged. But when it comes to people reaching out, mostly they're reaching out because they want to know how they can get people to be on their media longer.
You know, going back to the video you showed them while they were in the MRI machine, why did you decide to show the vice presidential debate? What was the strategy behind that? Because when I think extremes, I think, well, you could have shown Trump and Clinton. Like, that would have been an extreme. So why the vice presidential debate?
Great question. So we actually showed them a number of different videos. And for each video, we had a motivation. We showed them one video, which was a Earth BBC video on beavers making dams. So it was not political at all. And the reason we show them that is because we wanted to understand whether perhaps Republican brains and Democratic brains just process everything in the world differently. And the truth is that that doesn't happen. You know, whatever your political ideology is, it doesn't matter. You see beavers making dams in the same way. So that's really good news, right? Because that means that there are ways in which we can still find touch points with people on the opposite sides of the political spectrum. We also showed them videos of political content that was extremely dry. So just very classic reporting without any trigger words, without any fear-based tactics, but about topics that people really care about. And the reason we did that is we wanted to see, does it matter if people are listening to hot topics like abortion or immigration or whatever it might be, or does it matter the way that it's actually being said and the way that people are talking about these particular topics? And then this other video that we showed with the vice presidential candidates, they were talking, they were using all sorts of inflammatory language. Now, the reason we didn't, so what we basically found is that for when we compare those three types of videos to each other, it's the one that has the most inflammatory language that is the most potent and gets individuals to be most extreme in their perspective and aligned. So it's not the beavers making dams, and it's not, you know, some dry news segment just simply reporting on what happened. So it really matters how people are talking about it. That's number one. Number two, to your question, why didn't you show them Clinton and Trump talking? We didn't want to show them video footage that they might have already seen, in which case they would have already known how it went down. They would have already had a response at the time that it happened. A lot less people watched the vice presidential debate. And so we felt that we could still get that inflammatory kind of language and people really caring about both sides of the aisle while not having as many people who had already watched it.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess you could have shown them English Parliament could get heated, but then I guess the accents could get in the way, or the way that they use language. I think about this MRI machine. Was it difficult to schedule time? I thought those things were in high demand. And was it difficult, that portion of the study, to like schedule and book time with a machine?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have scanners at Brown, and most universities have scanners in which they're completely devoted to research. So our scanner is shared amongst all scientists, scientists who are doing vision research, scientists who are doing political polarization research, all kinds of things. And so we are always, you know, trying to finagle to get in on the scanner to work with other researchers at Brown who are studying other topics. But, you know, we just have like a schedule where we can, you know, book forward a couple of months in advance. The harder part is finding people who are extreme, who, you know, getting people who are very extreme to participate in our studies. That was a lot harder.
That doesn't seem like it would be a hard thing to do. Did they know what they were signing up for? Did you let them know what you're looking for? Or did you have to, like, kind of coded questions to measure their extremeness before they hopped in there?
That's exactly right. We basically interviewed 360 individuals. And from those 360 individuals, we picked the individuals who are most extreme on the left and the right, and who showed their extremity in multiple different ways. So they weren't sort of trying to, let's say, play us to make them think that they knew what we were doing or so what so forth. The goal always in psychological research is to bring people in without deception, but without revealing all of what we're studying, because then people can, you know, try to do what is called like game strategy and not actually do what we want them to do because they think that they're doing the opposite thing and therefore messing around with the study and so on. It can get complicated quickly.
Yeah, I could imagine. You go in for a study and you think, I can, you know, this may be relaxing. I just have to not move. That's my job. And I'll watch the video.
Right.
And then something political shows up on the screen and you're thinking, oh, no, not again. There's no place in the world I can get away from political content right now.
That's true. They knew when they went in the scanner, though, that they were going to be watching political videos. That they knew.
That works. Well, okay, so the American Psychological Association picked this up. That's how I found out about your research at Brown University. You know, if people wanted to learn more about this or maybe some of the research you're doing, you know, this is where I would normally say, go ahead and plug what you're doing. But I don't know, do you plug studies at a university? I don't know if you have to or not.
Well, anybody can check out the research that we do by going to our website, which is feldenhalllab.com, or going to any of the websites of the journals. Sometimes they're behind paywalls. But we do all sorts of research in the lab, from political polarization to emotion research and some other stuff as well. So people are welcome to come to Brown University via our website and check out anything we're doing.
Yeah, one of the life hacks I learned was if you found a paper you want to read and it's behind a paywall, if you just email the researcher, they're normally more than happy to send it to you.
So absolutely.
You can learn so much that way. Oriel Feldman Hall, I really had a fantastic time learning about this. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
We have one more segment. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD. Don't go anywhere. We got one more segment here. If there's ever a way you wanted to message me outside the show, maybe just drop me a line, you can look up Ryan Recker on Twitter at Ryan Recker or Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio would be the way to do it. It's been a long night for me. So it's Labor Day, and so basically last night, Sunday night, I went to bed at about 9 o'clock. I woke up at midnight, so I had 3 hours of sleep. I checked in with Coast to Coast AM about an hour before the show. And then I went upstairs, had a bowl of Captain Crunch, came back down and did 4 hours of Coast to Coast AM between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. At 5 a.m., did a quick message to the producer here at WORD, ran upstairs, had a bagel sandwich I cooked, came back down, checked in, and now the show from 6 a.m. about to wrap up here at 10 a.m. It has been two back-to-back shows on a Labor Day, on a day that I should be sitting back, relaxing, putting my feet up and saying, you know what, I do deserve a day for all the hard work I'm doing. But guess what's going to happen right at 10 o'clock? You guessed it. The feet will go up, I'll try to start a movie, and I'll fall asleep 10 minutes in on the couch. Because that's how my ideal Labor Day would go. But however you're spending it, I hope that you have the opportunity to rest and know that you are appreciated. If you worked all your life and now retired, your labor is still appreciated. If you're still working and grinding, maybe the better days are yet to come for you, and you're still out there working, maybe even on this Labor Day. I do salute you guys. Just a couple of things here before we go. I saw that Karl Rove was on Fox News talking about elections and what this is going to look like in this next election. I found this kind of fascinating. Let me play this clip for you, because I think in recent years, Karl Rove has gained a little bit more credibility when he lost it there for a while. It just seems like Karl Rove was just not cutting it. And no, there was a time where he was looked at as the gold standard. Then he was looked at as the throwaway. But he has slowly started to rebuild his reputation, I believe. And it shows, because I tend to listen to him and give him more credibility than I have in recent years. Here's what he was discussing just recently when it comes to the upcoming elections. Let me play this from Fox News.
But here's what their standard bearer, Gavin Newsom, has to say, and see how you take this. Roll that tape.
I don't think Donald Trump wants another election. You think for a second you want... I have two dozen Trump 2028 hats. His folks keep sending me.
And you think he's going to run again?
Who spends $200 million on a ballroom at their home and then leaves the house? This is serious, guys. This is serious.
Yes, I remember Biden saying that, Carl, and we only have 10 seconds, but is a continual trolling of Trump going to do it?
No, it's not. And again, they need to focus on Americans who say, what are you going to do to make my life better? And how are you going to be different than what we've got? How are you going to be a change agent? And merely attacking the sitting president of the United States is no guarantee whatsoever that they're going to win that ultimate contest.
Right. So the efforts that Gavin Newsom's going through right now, and I think we can all recognize what those efforts are. The idea that I am going to use Trump's tactics on Donald Trump to point out the absurdity of it. I think that's what, in his mind, he thinks he's doing. The fact that Gavin Newsom could sit in front of a group of people and say, Donald Trump's people keep sending me Make America Great Again hats or Trump 2028 or whatever, the hats they keep sending him, that is objectively hilarious. That is... That is hilarious, because what Donald Trump is doing and his people are, they understand that this is triggering him and they are trolling him to the point where Gavin Newsom thinks, well, I've lost it. I'm going to go off the deep end and I'm just going to troll him back. He's already lost at that point. Gavin Newsom has. All right. Again, I'm on Twitter at Ryan Recker, Ryan Recker Radio. If you want to try to find me on Facebook, would be another great way to connect. I hope we get to do this again soon. Tara is fantastic. You guys have one of the best morning show hosts of the country, and it's always an honor when they ask me to do the fill-ins. So I hope I get to do it again soon. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day on WORD. We'll see you soon.